This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
General Motors makes a multi-billion-dollar change. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. General Motors says it's selling its European car business, including Germany's Opel. The PSA Group, which makes Peugeot and Citroën, is buying it in a $2.3 billion deal. This marks a big move out of a big market for GM. Let's talk about that with Jamie Kipman, New York Bureau Chief at Automobile Magazine. Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
So we're talking nearly two decades without a profit for GM in Europe. Why has it had so much trouble there?
Well, Europe is a tough market, and I think that it's taken GM a while to sort of adjust to the realities of the market there. But it was a really strong engineering center for GM, and while it shows a loss on paper, in fact, a lot of their platforms that were for cars sold in America, China, and elsewhere were derived from the Opel platforms.
Well, this is something that GM has talked about over the years, exiting Europe, so you've had some time to think about it. What does it mean if GM actually steps out of the European market in this way?
Giving up on this company that they've owned for almost 90 years suggests that they're banking on a future that is more about crossovers and SUVs than small passenger cars. It also reflects sort of a kind of short-term thinking. This is very much related to their desire to pump up their share price, which is down. And were the prices of gasoline to go up, as I feel confident they have, the picture could change. And, you know, with a sustained rise in gas prices or a more significant rise, we could be back to where we were when the recession hit and suddenly the bottom fell out of the SUV and crossover market.
Okay, Jamie Kipman at Automobile Magazine, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
It is budget time for mayors. The challenge is President Trump wants big federal budget cuts and may also withhold funds from cities that don't support his immigration policy. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra looks at the very tricky business of putting together a city budget with giant question marks.
New York City gets about a tenth of its funding from the federal government and doesn't know how much of that might go away, which makes budgeting pretty difficult. Carol Kellerman is president of the Citizens Budget Commission.
They can't incorporate it into the budget because there's no it to incorporate.
For now, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's draft budget assumes the city will get federal dollars.
They're just planning in the normal course, but trying to be cautious and not start ambitious new programs.
Another reason mayors may not include potential federal cuts in their budget proposals, it's too risky. Esther Fuchs teaches political science at Columbia University.
If you show a plan where, oh, you know, I have enough resources to cover it, you're really reducing the effectiveness of your strategy to make sure this money continues to come from the federal government.
That doesn't mean cities aren't thinking about the worst-case scenarios. In New York, I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Germany's Deutsche Bank is trying to get past a rocky period by issuing new shares. The bank aims to raise around $8.5 billion. It has been troubled in recent months by massive losses and multi-billion-dollar fines. We are in the middle of a pretty unbelievable time in American politics. There is a lot to take in and a lot to talk about at work, with political discussion, debate, and distraction spilling over into office meetings, conversations, and emails. KQED's Sam Harnett reports on new research into just how much politics is intruding on our jobs.
Chris Duggan says he's never seen his employees so preoccupied with the news. And he'd know. He's the CEO of BetterWorks, which develops software to manage employee performance.
This is like a whole new world of distraction.
Why? The election of President Trump and subsequent events. Duggan says instead of recharging on the weekends like good worker bees, employees are reading news or perhaps protesting. At work, they are posting on social media and debating with colleagues. To quantify all this distraction, Duggan commissioned Wakefield Research to do a national survey.
The results were shocking. We found that 87% of employees are reading political social media posts during the workday.
The survey of people from across the political spectrum has a margin of error of plus or minus 4.5%. It found that workers are spending an average of 2 hours a day reading or talking about politics on the job. Nathan Richter conducted the survey. He says what's most surprising is the change in corporate culture. People are now talking politics at work, and not just with colleagues.
Nearly a third have talked to a client or a customer about that. More than a third have talked to a boss or a manager about that. That's insanity.
For some employees, all the politics is more than just a distraction. Take Amanda Delzell, an employee at BetterWorks. She's been sucked into toxic arguments on social media. And that's bringing back anxiety she'd conquered years ago in therapy.
I was experiencing anxiety attack symptoms again.
Delzell's coworker, Christine Nguyen Vaith, sacrifices sleep to read the news.
I'll typically be awake at 3 or 4 in the morning catching up on these articles.
She says it's our responsibility as citizens to be informed. Now, as a boss, you can't stop people from feeling that way, says Andy Rubin. He's CEO of Yurtle, another Bay Area tech company.
Clamping down and trying to deny people the way that they're feeling outside of work would be counterproductive to what my goals are, right, which is a productive workplace.
Rubin says workers need to have some space on the job to talk about what's on their minds. And right now, he says, there is a lot on their minds. I'm Sam Harnett for Marketplace.
And finally, X-Men movie Logan was number one at the box office over the weekend. But farther down the list, we're seeing the power of an Oscar win. Moonlight had its best weekend yet, with the indie film pulling in $2.5 million, about $1 million more than it cost to make. Its best picture win, of course, got perhaps a bit more attention than most, with the top award mistakenly announced at first as going to La La Land. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.